You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 1 for August 2010.
To today's session of the Green Lantern Corecast. As always, we're here to bring you the top formal news of all things Green Lantern, such as Green Lantern Corps, the current movies are going to be coming out soon, and the would-be animated series that may or may not come out. Today, joining me are Brandon West, the co-creator of the speciesite.proboards.com. We also have the ever-present Colton, always with his razor wits of Green Lantern trivia, as well as Eric Cahill, who is bipartisan at best. We also have Kuhan, which I should actually name you by name.
You mean name him by nine?
I get it. That's fine. No, it's a joke. I get it.
Name him by name.
Anyways. And today we're touching down on the latest issues of Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, which are both featuring the ongoing story of what's happening in the Brightest Day franchise.
Yay! Yay!
And of course, I am your host, Frankie Mateo, bringing you the ever-present lovable cast. Everyone, say how much you love our audience.
It took us like half an hour to get us through that, just that opening.
Yeah, so I hope the audience loves us.
I hope the audience.
I love the audience.
I'm all about the audience.
God
damn it.
The smart one.
Colton, I hope Razor Witch, you know you love the audience, right?
I love the audience.
So Colton, are you gonna?
Aside from that, let's bring it forward. Let's bring it forward, and as to our review and our general opinion of Green Lantern number 56. Which features the return of Hector Hammond since his long absence since the Blackest Night series. What can we actually say about his return and what took place in this issue?
Orange things happen in this issue.
Orange things do occur in this issue, but
oh, don't remind me.
But many,
App Aliapsa shows up again, but nobody knows App Aliapsa.
We don't know that for sure.
No, yes, we do. It's at Ballyapsa.
Yeah, we
and
do.
and I hope they appreciate that I'm coming onto this cast after coming off of an oral surgery. And stop interrupting me, damn it.
Hal Jordan buys some muscle t-shirts.
Yes, in the beginning of the in four pages in, we apparently see our first coloring mistake as to his the pattern of his uniform
I think that's straight up an art mistake, just a drawing mistake.
You know what, I'll grant that it might have been an art mistake. It looks more as if his he's not wearing the padded point to the crotch uniform.
Yeah.
But it looks like he's just wearing a t-shirt when he's crossing his arms and talking to the sheriff official that town.
What are we talking about?
Unlike the first full page, for some reason. I don't even know what's a full page. But on the first full page thing, Hal Jordan is wearing a shirt, and it just looks like it's a shirt. It's cut off at straight instead of at a little point like usual.
He's talking
to Carl from Family Matters.
Carl Winslow appears in this issue.
Definitely looks more like Uncle Phil, so
it
don't be
like,
racist.
It does not look like Uncle Phil.
That definitely looks more like Uncle Phil. It doesn't actually matter who it looks like.
Yeah, it does not matter.
This is a key story point.
It's not like a Firestorm's dad Ving Rhames.
Aside from that, the main thing that occurs in this issue is the fact that Larfleet seems to have been gathering just trinkets and whatnots across the entire globe and taking it back to his hidey hole on, I forget, where are we, Milwaukee? I forget where he's staying. He's just seems to be gathering Christmas lights, things of this nature. Remember, this was once...
I think you say Colorado.
Colorado. This was once the famed Agent Orange who single-handedly defeated one or two Guardians by his lonesome, killed multiple Green Lanterns by himself, and is now writing a Christmas list for Santa Claus on top of a pile of junk that he stole from suburban houses.
Here's the deal. I happen to think that the joke that Larfleeze is obsessed with the idea of Santa Claus is actually a pretty funny joke. It would have been funnier if Geoff Johns had not said it was going to happen at every single convention and every single interview for the last 6 months. And if he didn't already tell us there was going to be a whole Christmas special devoted to this one panel joke, which, would have been a really funny joke if he had not told us about it, and then said later, don't worry about that. It waste 2 pages on a joke you're going to do 25 pages on later. Like, that's an asshole. That's a dick.
I love the way Larfleeze is writing, with, like, his entire hand just cramming onto the page.
Well, remember, he's an eon-old alien being who's apparently never used a pen.
And he sat around a room for thousands of years literally eating shit, and now he doesn't know he's
in that. I love he has so many letters on the floor, like, on the ground beneath him, because, like, he screwed up the letter, just threw it out, and keeps going.
I like that there's a guy that he's, like, sitting on.
This brings up a very interesting point. Is Santa canon in the DC Universe? Because we've seen Darkseid get gifts from Santa, mostly coal, mind you, but...
Didn't we also see Lobo kill Santa?
Say it again?
Didn't we also see Lobo kill Santa?
Did we?
I think we did.
I believe we have, both in print and media form.
I don't think these are Christmas wish lists. I think these are love letters to Santa.
You want to
know? I'll speak you right, baby.
Now I do want to point out that I think Doug Monkey's art is solid and awesome in this issue, except that every time he draws Larfleeze, it is a completely different character.
he looks nothing. He looks nothing as how he was first conceived. He appears to look more.
Well, no, even
I would say Muppetish.
Even in every single panel, he's sort of changed a little bit.
He does. It's actually, if you look at, I don't know what page it is. It's the page where right when Hector throws the car at them, and it's like one picture of Larfleeze going, "What do these entities do?" And right beneath it is completely different character who I guess is also supposed to be Larfleeze.
Yeah. Or like the page before that where he has hair on his snout, and then he doesn't have hair on his snout, and then he has hair on his snout again. And, like, his tusks, like, move the way they're shaped. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way his race is. They always change their appearance constantly.
It could be.
Probably an art mistake.
Well, remember, he seems to be, like, the only one left of his race, seeing that he killed two of those members in the pursuit of the Orange Lantern in the first place.
Because then you know two people equal a race.
Now, to continue on to what the point of this issue was, it seems that Hal Jordan wants to... learn from Larfleeze how he contained his entity within his own battery, seeing that there are four loose entities running around on Earth for whatever reason. The bird entity from the Blue Lantern, bull entity from the Red Lantern Corps, the predator from the Starfire,
and Starfire, so on and so forth. Does it really matter?
And so on and so forth. True, these entities are, you know, coming out of whim here, running around by the lonesomes, and no one seems to know why or ask the reason why.
You know what I think is interesting is that I suppose we've got the name of a lot of the entities now, and the only ones with accurate, like, names, Parallax and Iron are both words in the English language that have nothing to do with the entities, but for some reason, like, the other entities are, like, Ophidian and Ardara and, like, Stargate names, you know, and, like, why are we getting Stargate names when the other ones had, like, logical names? And because now it just makes the other name stand out even more. You could always say, oh, it's just they had funny names. But if you would have said, no, his name is Parallax in our language because of this, this, and this, but this woman's name is Adara in our language, and whatever. Another thing,
does that mean anything? I'm sorry, I'm not literate. Does Adara mean anything in English or something?
And Adara, as far as I could tell, Ophidian and Adara are probably just words that are like, he probably saw them in some kind of like theological book and just changed some letters around and stuff. Or maybe he just did sound effects. Like, oh, Dara and Ophidian, and like, sounds like a beat up.
But there is a huge, huge retcon in this book, obviously, where Hal Jordan said that the entity told him that he wanted hamburgers, when in the original issue he said cheeseburgers.
Yeah, so, well, it's just Hal Jordan's memory. Because Hal Jordan doesn't need to remember that there's some kind of the idea that why they've yet to make it clear that why, first off, that these characters are called the New Guardians, and I guess the idea that these representatives of each core, and how come he didn't know Larfleece is still on Earth, and this is the issue where he says, oh, I thought you left Earth, and I was like, really? Because I thought you were under the impression that they were all still on Earth, because I thought that was the deal, but I guess not. I mean, it seems a little weird for, like, 5 months after, like, five issues after Blackest Night for us, still not quite sure how that issue ended, you know? And I do want to point out really quick about Larfleece, the fact that he's insanely depowered, where, again, he fought off Guardians and Core, and the only reason anybody got a chance on him was because Hal had the blue light with him, and yet Hector Hammond gives him and Hal Jordan the problem.
This is true.
So he kind of just ripped away the lantern.
Well, maybe he was caught off guard. It's not like he had his battery, and he was fighting them.
It's just not like Batman, who needs preparation time when he's supposed to go fight. These guys have ultimate power weapons on their rings that, at the whim of their thoughts, can go at somebody. It doesn't seem like he needs that much. Oh my God, you caught me on surprise. I cannot create my legion of Orange Lanterns to come and fight you.
Well, he needs a lantern to do that.
Well, I guess the idea that a giant head. What is your strategy fighting a giant head?
Wait, Larfleece has already defeated a giant head and added him to his collection of orange misfits run around.
Larfleece against anybody isn't really a fair fight, because Larfleece can fight Guardians. So, I mean, anytime, the last couple times we've seen him fight anybody in Blackest Night and in this, it's always like him going like, get away from my lantern, and then everybody trying to get his lantern, and him just kind of randomly blasting them. In lead-ups, we've seen him incinerate people without even trying, you know, and there's parts here where he's fighting off Hal, and then he's blasting Hector in the face, and it's like, why is he only lightly blasting him? I mean, Hector can't possibly be that powerful that he's able to fight off this guy. I mean, it just seems like...
Yeah. I'm sorry, maybe it's a psychic thing, and he's fucking with his mind.
It's possible.
I mean, that's reasonable, right? I mean, the guy's only power is his psychic ability.
It's reasonable.
So,
it's reasonable. I mean, the guy has given Hal Jordan a trouble in the past.
Hal did mention that the guy was searching for naked Carol pictures while fighting them. So, I mean, it's not like... It'd be too hard to...
It could have been banter.
I think we've seen enough of Hector to know that he'd do something as weird as that.
All right.
I want to say one random thing really quick that's kind of completely off topic. One thing that really bothers me with this issue is when you see Renee Montoya and St. Walker in... Not a Parbat. And you see Renee Montoya without her mask on, and I was under the distinct impression that the last time we saw Renee Montoya, it was supposed to be a big mystery whether or not she permanently had the mark of Cain, a big, gigantic, burning circle on her face at all times. I mean, the only argument is that this issue could have taken place after that, or that Renee Montoya, for some reason, being really cool. This is, I don't know if anybody's read this issue, that's the, that was a backup in the Batwoman Detective Comic run, but at the end of that... Well, spoiler alert. At the end of that, Vandal Savage, who has the Mark of Cain, which is a burning fire that makes everyone who looks at him hate him, transfers it to Renee Montoya, and the only reason, or the only issue is that Renee Montoya refused to take off her mask to prove whether she has it on her face or not, so I guess Jeff Johns is like, nah, that's stupid. Goodbye, Greg Rucka. Fuck you, by the way.
No, well, you can say that it takes place beforehand, because she still has the long hair, and... Obviously, Cully and his hideous redesign of Renee Montoya.
Wrong.
Jeff said, hey, Greg, here's $5, buy something nice, I'm taking the Mark of Cain away.
Yeah, it seemed really shitty, especially considering what else, but...
Well, I don't think they're going to do anything with Renee anyway, so...
Well, that's what I'm saying, so it's kind of like, everybody's like, what, you know, oh, you know, name one minority they rip on, and name more than three, or name more than five, and it's just one more character that had development up as of 4 months ago, and now it's completely thrown out the window.
I was about to ask why there was no Yo-Yo in this issue, but then I noticed that right at the end in the corner, when it says next to catch a predator, it has Larfleece running and going Yo-Yo. So.
Oh, I hated that. hated that so much.
It's weird. He's become the comic relief character. Also, though, one thing I did want to point out is when Hector Hammond came and was asking as to what makes Larfleece have so much, you know, so much greed in him, you see at least three balloons as to the inner thoughts of Larfleece. This is a serious character who has such insatiable lust for his greed. You know, his depths are beyond measure, apparently. And the three that are shown really don't give me that whole essence as to why he has so much greed. And this is, you know, just to point him out real quick. One is showing, apparently, Larfleeze, if we can assume, in a detention cell. Another would be him working as a slave. And another one seems to be a woman being taken away from her child. Now, we can assume this could be Larfleeze being taken away from, or his son, or a child of his. But, again, we don't know. The inner mind of Larfleeze, the now comic relief character, seems to be even more of a mystery.
Yeah. Aside from the giant ugliness that is that panel, I was really kind of curious about the whole prison thing, and I don't like the fact that there's, like, a bunch of his species. I figured he would be the last one, and that would be cool.
Okay,
but,
he may be the last one,
yeah,
because
this is
when he was a flashback.
The rest of his species was gone. I mean, there's got to be two to
remember,
make more of the species.
Well, yeah, remember, when he first was introduced back into Ancient Aura's arc, It was known that eons ago. It was eons, not like, and it might get retcon later for all I know. It wasn't 10 years ago. It was eons ago.
Though admittedly, they have very Earth-like prisons.
Yeah, he does have Earth-like prisons. That he stole the orange light, Pandora's box itself from the Guardians.
And jeans, they are jeans.
Yes, nope. Yes, they're wearing jeans and like the police badges are the exact same.
Like they're all working out of New York.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's weird. Like looking at that last little thought bubble or flashback bubble, that is an ugly looking female. Like,
she looks just like the
ew,
male.
Her head doesn't even.
We are not specious here. She is a very low.
I don't have a problem against her.
Esque alien race that I have no idea what to call their race.
I'm sure I'm sure his mom is a lovely woman.
The Bullwinkle race is fine.
The Bullwinkle race.
They're lovely people.
I can't say that I'm too excited to see that played out, just like the whole Atrocitus.
His secret love for St. Walker?
His secret love. Yeah, that.
That
that's,
was so
that's
weird.
Another thing that I don't care to see played out. But okay, well, let's move on.
What did you like?
I like how Larfleeze's his hair is all glowy at the top until he loses the lantern and then stops being all glowy at the top. Then when he gets it back, it's not glowy anymore, so I don't know.
Where are you looking?
Well, like before he loses the lantern, the entire time, his head at the top is all glowing. It's like bright orange.
Sometimes. It's like at the whim of the...
The colorist?
The colorist, it seems. But, no, the whim of the colorist, it seems. Because even when he has the lantern back, he doesn't have the glowy...
Right. But
the glowy head.
Right, exactly. That was kind of weird. I don't know why he doesn't get the glowy head back when he gets the lantern back. But that might just be because he had to do a conscious thought and not consciously thinking about it.
He probably lost his subscription to the Firehead. I don't know. Anyway, the one thing I wanted to mention also is at the end where Hector Ramon finally eats the Orange Lantern and is granted power by the entity, I forget how you pronounce his name, Ophidian, the Orange entity Ophidian, and he's given a drastic, Project Runway makeover, and he's the... Everyone's getting a Project Runway makeover. Remember, even a few pages before his, we see Wonder Woman's brand new costume back on in an advertisement. But again, he gets this brand new makeover, which I'm not terribly pleased about. I mean, I'll give this though. Carlton made a great point. It reminds me of Jafar when he becomes a snake from Aladdin. But the fact alone is, it's a age-old, timeless, biblical entity of space and time. And the best it can do is to throw on a Orange Lantern suit and give him a forked tongue.
Yeah, this is the weirdest, looking thing ever.
It is bizarre how these entities work.
So shouldn't Larfleeze's power just like be all gone now?
No, he still has a ring or something.
He still got a ring.
No, I thought the whole point of the Orange Lantern was supposed to be one guy, one greeter, and
when Lex Luthor had the power, they still both had the power. I mean, they both wanted it for themselves, but they both had it.
Well, no, his was a deputy ring. We're talking about somebody in control of the entire lantern here.
Yeah, full-on control of the only power source of existence for the Green Entity.
Right. As I think it should be logical that all of Larfleeze's power should be gone. His constructs should be Haman's now.
And it should actually make sense as to why now Larfleeze's power apparently goes over 4 million.
When you think about it, consider this. Him eating both the battery and Ophidam means he should be Hal Jordan Parallax level powers. He should be rewrite the universe level.
Well, that's assuming that his
because Hal Jordan Parallax at this point has been probably very depowered. It's more like Kyle Rayner Parallax powers.
Well, you're only as strong as the writer wants you to be.
It's not just the entity. He has the entity and all the greed energy in the universe, minus what's in Larfleeze's ring.
When did they ever say it was all the greed in
the
universe?
Well, again,
only battery.
Yeah, again, like these batteries function. These batteries, as they've been said, have functioned on the pseudoscience that these they gain and they draw their power from all the emotions of the universe, such as the Green Lantern central power battery draws all the will of the universe and condenses it into a power source in this one spot.
I mean, you could say since greed's so far from the center of the spectrum, it's
is it?
Yeah, I think since greed's so far from the center of the spectrum,
I don't think it is.
Yeah, because the end of the end of the spectrum would be red and violet.
Rage.
Right.
Rage.
And greed is right next to rage.
And
orange,
it should be
orange
rage.
Light.
Let's all pull out our color chart,
orange
people.
Orange.
Look like you're reading rainbows.
Okay. My pain pills are kicking in, so I don't know what we're talking about.
But aside from that, this issue itself,
fine, whatever,
as somewhat lackluster as it can be, I'm not really that enthralled as to see what's going to happen next. I mean, it's true, it's now Hector Herrmann with all the power of the Orange Light, which at one point in time when it was introduced was one of the most fearsome powers imaginable. Mm-hmm. Able to alone take on the entire squad of Green Lanterns and Guardians present at the time. So, what happens next? Who knows?
And you're not interested in what happens
next. I'm not that interested in what happens next. I am slightly enthralled as to I'm slightly invested as to see how manages to get his sneak out of this one. You know, it's weird because all I'm thinking about when I think about this is Shaggy and Scooby going like, uh-oh. how are we gonna get away from the abominable space zombie.
I have two questions. The first being, at the end of this issue, when Hal's face is like, he looks all proud and ready or something, and he's half smiling, why?
Hal always, ready for anything. It's the weirdest thing. He's character development-wise, Hal Jordan is all these things combined. He is the statesman, but yet he's not the Boy Scout. He's the fearless test pilot, yet he's also the player by the rules, yet he doesn't play by the rules. He's one of the most confusing characters I've ever seen. he literally stands there going like, I'm prepared for whatever hits me, yet at times I say I'm not prepared for whatever hits me, yet I'll run into it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that the guy who just got his ass whooped by the giant head, just seen the giant head get stronger, you would think he'd be a little nervous.
Yet he isn't.
He's the man with no fear.
He may be the man with no fear, but it seems that even the quote, like the one line he said, he has no fear, yet his worry and doubt that he has to worry about, yet he never seems to have worry and doubt on his face.
My second question was... My second question is that why... Are the Indigos on Earth because... Because when we first read about the entities, it said that all the entities were currently on Earth. So are the Indigos currently on Earth, or did they take the entities away?
Yeah, that is a good question, seeing that it was explained, efficiently explained in one of the stories, that all the entities were on Earth, but yet when you see the Indigo Lanterns at one point, they were on the back on unknown planet.
No, not necessarily. They could be someplace unknown on Earth. They could be hiding in the swamp in the Legion of Doom.
The unknown Earth, yes, where we have satellites that look at every point on Earth.
No, but it could be in some rain, like some sort of weird forest somewhere, unknown place.
It could be.
I don't think they're on Earth. I just think the entity is on Earth.
So they all came back to Earth.
Well, then again, we're following the entities in this issue. We're not following the lanterns. So yeah, you would assume that it has to be on Earth if we're following the entity.
Well, and the lanterns, lanterns are all looking, like all the indigos are looking at the entity.
Yeah, I just think it just happens not. It's like the only one not on Earth right now.
All right. Aside from that, what's your opinion? What are you guys' opinions as to what's going on in this issue? Or, you know, as to what's going to, if you're prepared for issue 57, or for
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next issue, actually. I enjoyed the little two-page splash of the entities. I really want to see some more Blue Lantern stuff. I feel like they've gotten the fucking shaft post-Blackest Night, or during Blackest Night as well.
I'm not sure about that. I have to, interject. I'm not sure they got shafted. I mean, they've been one of the most somewhat developed characters since Blackest Night.
I feel like we only know one Blue Lantern.
One Blue Lantern, but literally, do you really want to know about the rest of them?
No, that's not my problem. I don't care to know. I wouldn't mind knowing, of course. But I'm saying that I want to see him again. The most we really seen out of St. Walker during Blackest Night was in the Flash issue when he popped up and helped Barry out for like 2 seconds, and you know his little one-liners about Hope during the series, and he didn't do anything during Blackest Night. Well, nobody did anything, and my thing is I want to see some more of what arc was it where it was St. Walker, Hal, Sinestro, and the Red Lanterns. Probably the Red Lantern arc.
That's actually the one that was.
Rage of the Red Lanterns, people. Rage of the Red Lanterns.
Wow.
Yeah. I want to see more of St. Walker versus Sinestro, because that was fucking awesome. Or St. Walker versus John Stewart. That was fucking awesome. I want to get back to that.
That was the greatest fight of all time. John Stewart's like, oh man, I'm going to totally kill you. Oh man, I make Kamatui.
Who's excited to see a St. Walker and a Montoya relationship, guys? That's going to be awesome if it happens.
Oh, yeah, when Montoya becomes the new leader of the Blue Lanterns, yes. Remember, we're getting the leader of the Blue Lanterns.
That would be cool for like a second. Anyway, I'm looking forward to 57, only because I'm hoping we get less of what we got here and more of what was hinted here.
All right.
For me, one of the things I'm looking forward to is seeing how Hector Hammond puts together all this energy and puts it to good use, or bad use, as it were. Because you don't get to see this combination that often. You don't get to see someone who has the entire power battery and the entity all at once. You just don't. I want to see effects. I want to see like the Earth freaking start messing up as he tries to make contracts, like just starting to rip apart. I want to see some damage here.
Are you just saying that because you want to see a Dragon Ball level event?
No. You see mountains breaking and boats just rising from the ground.
Here's some Bruce Stockner music.
The point I'm trying to make is what I want to see is actual the freaking power level he has. I want to see it be used in a way that actually is believable.
Would
that power level be over 9,000?
What I'm trying to say is I want to see someone who can destroy a galaxy-level power actually do something like that, not throw a blast that should nuke half the universe and just blow up one tree. It's ridiculous.
So
to paraphrase, this is going to be Kuhan. Follow me here. Says, John, what does the power ring say about his power level?
It's over 9,000!
Okay, I'm
never going
to
talk to
real quick here, Colton. Like, we see that he's powerful. If we read into everything we've read before, he's supposed to be this big, massive threat now, right?
Yes.
If he throws that little blast, couldn't you chalk that up to him not wanting to take over the world? That's never been his ambition. Like, is he going to blow up half a coal city just to get Carol's attention? I mean, isn't that what he's gunning for now?
He should blow up half a coal city by accident because he doesn't even know how to control his level of power.
All right, so you equate massive power with
power struggle.
Reckless abandonment.
You don't understand how powerful he is.
I don't think you understand.
You all understand.
Logic.
But you don't understand all. The point is, he has the same power area that Parallax had. You know, the one, oh, I want to restart the universe. Okay, I am.
Yeah,
not my thing.
I get that he's a threat. I get that. I get that he's a huge threat, and that when he does do something, it should make a difference. But this isn't Parallax. He's not completely evil. This is just deranged evil, as in when I do something, I'm doing it for this purpose, which is a lot minor towards.
But Parallax is the one who's just being manipulated. This Ophidian situation is direct takeover.
Yeah, that's what it is. The other thing is,
you think Hammond is completely gone? Is that what you're saying?
Not completely.
No. See, it seems that the way Ophidian works, unlike how Parallax apparently worked in the past, or how he said he worked in the past, was that he suggested things to you you do fear or whatever. Ophidian works in a way that, listen, man, you totally want these things, right? Take them.
Jeff Johns, I think. I'm not sure who said it. So I think it was Jeff Johns said that the farther away you get from the spectrum, the more power, the more control the entity has over its controller, which is why when you've got Ion, you have full power because you're right at the center of the spectrum. When you have Parallax, you don't have full power because you're not in the center of the spectrum. So
you actually have full control when you're Ion, but you have more power when you're farther away. It's more powerful, but less control.
Right. The further it goes, the more powerful it is, but the more you are subjected to its corruption.
I think that's actually what it's about the rings, but I'm sure it works for the entities too.
This particular Ophidian should be more powerful than what Parallax was in the Zero Hour, by that logic.
By that logic, yeah. So, question, is Indigo at the end, or is Love at the end? Because I would assume that Love
is at the end.
Love and Hater are the two opposites.
Alright, just making sure.
Alright, that's
Peter at the same area.
All right, aside from that, moving to you, Kuhan. What do you think? Are you prepared for the next issue? Are you psyched for it? Are you ready to see the Highball, Captain Highball Jordan going along with Scooby Doo?
I think it'll be Highball Jordan and Scooby Doo in a race against I don't even know what to call Hector Hammond. So
Jafar.
Jafar, right. In a race against Jafar to find the Predator. to catch a Predator.
So Chris Hansen, Scooby Doo, Jafar.
Best crossover ever.
Predator.
Hal Jordan, by the way, is Chris Hansen in this scenario, right?
Yes, he is.
Alright. That's what we're looking forward to.
Moving on, we're pretty much I'm on the fence about 57. These guys are pretty, but I'm eagerly more and more jumping on board with the fact that Chris Hansen's on this now. that's for the audience to decide whether or not they want to go for 57. But for our opinion, read it out, see what's going on. If you want to jump on the 57, go for it.
They should have got Chris Hansen instead of Ryan Reynolds.
And then we're going to move on to Green Lantern Corps number 50. The 50th issue of the Green Lantern Corps made it to the 50th issue. And seriously, did we ever think it was not going to? I mean, it's been the strongest title for me, in my opinion, as for the Green Lantern books right now. And it's still going pretty strong, even with Tony Bedard is doing a great job in this title right now. And we are introduced again to Cyborg Superman, the greatest villain of the Green Lantern Corps.
I never thought that it would be that when it got to issue 50, it would only be six issues behind Green Lantern.
There was
Red Lantern delays was ridiculous.
I do like App Ali Apsa appearing in this book too.
The Mad Guardian is getting a lot of screen time.
Whoa! What did he do in this issue?
Well, he showed up when John Stewart was taking a trip down memory lane with Professor Captain Zephyrhead Henshaw. He explained to him as to how he came in control of the Alpha Lanterns and how they were going to relieve him of the
control. Oh, yeah, his influence. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So jump issue. I love the first page.
I like
Kyle Rayner's on the first page, full on tactical.
Full on tactical with a 5 o'clock shadow.
Everybody's got a 5 o'clock shadow. That's Guardian style, man.
That's Green Lantern protocol. You can't go out into the field without a spell.
even Hank Henshaw on his metallic face is a 5 o'clock shadow. you've got Sornik with a 5 o'clock shadow.
You know, it is space metal. Space metal is spreaky like that.
But yeah, I agree. That's definitely a great verse page. Great verse page.
I like the colors in this book more than like the colors in Green Lantern, which is strange because both of the primary colors on both of these books were Randy Meyer.
Randy Meyer, yeah, I noticed that.
And
but I really did like the lighting and the coloring for Green Lantern. Like the Orange Lantern constructs were fucking beautiful, and like that last panel we see with Hal and Agent Orange. I thought the lighting there was great too, but the coloring here was good. So yeah,
I like how it was a little bit more vibrant, just like bright colors. I don't know.
Yeah, we gotta give props to Adrian Saez and Randy Meyer with Carrie Strachan.
Yes,
I'm not sure if I can pronounce her name correctly, but
Strachan. She which is weird because she was also one of the colorists on Green Lantern.
I think we'll. Yeah. We'll have to get her on the show and ask for that pronunciation.
Yes, we will.
I do like the fact that this book has one inker as opposed to the, what is it, six inkers?
30 on Monkey, yeah.
On Monkey. You got the one inker, and that's, Monkey, you know, that's consistency.
He's the hottest thing right now in there. But going into this issue, the Revolt of the Alpha Lanterns Part 3 of the Green Lantern Corps, it's, you know, it pretty much dives into diving into the mind of Hank Henshaw, Cyborg Superman, into his motivation or his you know, his plot device as to why he's into the Green Lantern books again, seeing that he was destroyed after, you know, in the Sinestro Corps War, and we actually see that he actually had a small part, even though it wasn't in the Blackest Night series itself, but he had a small part in Blackest Night when he shows up in front of Necron, totally invisible to the eyes of death.
I do like how they didn't try to make him look like Superman before the accident.
Giving him the Superman type face.
Right. That's a good minor attention to detail because that's not what it was before. Before he was just a regular dude, and then he became the Terminator Superman.
Yeah, the
so much beast you want to live.
I did like how apparently he. After being resurrected by the Manhunters after the Sinestro Corps arc, he achieved everything by defeating, like, studying the words for some reason. Just deactivated the lot of them as thanks for bringing him back from the great grasp, you know, the grasp of death that he wanted so badly. It's even great that he's when he comes down, seeing the woman he actually, you know, ripped apart during the special in the Green Lantern, during the Sinestro Corps War, doesn't even seem to acknowledge his existence, seeing that he has no heart to acknowledge anymore. He's just a cold, calculating, robotic. What is he, like?
Thing in the way.
Thing annoyed? I guess you could
think in the way.
Thing in the way. I'm honestly, I thought you said thing annoyed. I was going to go with that.
No, I didn't like that part. I would have figured, like, He would have just killed it. Like, I don't think he should be, like, completely blind to it. It's not like he could see buildings or anything. So I think Necron should have broke his neck or something. But, you know, too many pages were wasted on this little flashback.
I like the lettering in this book.
The lettering.
Well, because
any specific thing that caught your eye about the lettering?
There was first of all the fact that Hank Henshaw was all had robot lettering, but also because not everything was not half letters weren't bold and italicized. And I'm reading through it; it actually makes sense. It's like Ganthet,
no one's saying things like, "Listen, man, we totally have two Gex."
Yeah, right. At least it's like I thought you'd never get here.
That's probably a Bedard thing. I don't know. Okay. I haven't read a Bedard issue outside of Green Lantern in a while, so.
Well, reading one line here, I'll say, an old friend of yours promised you could fix me.
Well, no, an old friend of yours promised you could fix me.
Okay, that makes more sense. Instead of just yelling it in bold.
Yeah, not just yelling whatever's in bold. They were only interested in hearts, and I had none to offer. Try to imagine my horror, John. It was the end of all life, and I wasn't invited.
This was, in terms of this issue, you're good.
That didn't sound good.
That was a little bit strange.
This issue gives a good don't leave a man behind feel for, like, you know, which the Green Lantern Corps seems to be doing, you know, the aspect of these space cops, even though they're more like a functioning military than anything else. They're just police officers.
I actually find it interesting that Kyle grew all that facial hair between the cover and the first page.
Oh, yes. He keeps moving on. His stubble keeps to get more and more manlier.
By the end of the next issue,
he's growing a full beard.
He's gonna have like a Grizzly Adams thing going on by the next issue.
Is this the third Bedard issue? Because I feel like...
This is the last
issue, Kyle and Natu jumped out of bed together and we had that little drama. Was that last issue?
I believe that was last issue.
Okay, good, because I feel like I'm missing, like, a chapter or something. But anyway, I wasn't feeling the Cyborg, flashback. I couldn't think of anything more clever. All right, I didn't like the flashbacks. It's too many pages. I didn't care where he was. I wanted him dead. Of course, we knew he wasn't dead, but I wanted him to be gone. I feel like he's a character that should be gone for a while. Stick him over there with Superboy Prime or Superman Prime, whatever legality they have at this moment.
I think you can call him Superboy again. I'm not sure.
Superboy? I thought Superman was what they couldn't do.
No, they can call him Superboy. That they couldn't do, but now they're calling Connor Kent Superboy, so I think they can call him Superboy Prime again.
Okay, well, regardless of that, I think that aside from this terrible flashback, this wasted pages of flashback, it was a pretty good issue. I really enjoyed it. I loved Kyle swooping in and making that decision before he fucking went in there. He's like, I'm going in there, I'm getting my buddy, I'm leaving. I don't care if Ganthus showed up. That wasn't part of my plan. I'm out of here. I don't like the setup for next issue, which seems like it's going to be a quick fucking resolution, but I hope it's not that.
No, that's true. I really do hope that there is more to it than just the machines come back, revolt against their other machine overlords.
It'll seem like, what were those people called? The Daxamites. It'll seem like that all over again if we have another rise of people destroying somebody who's taking over their people.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of, man, we're being enslaved by a lot of other alien cultures.
A lot of oppression in the galaxy.
I noticed another coloring mistake.
I saw a few color mistakes. The fact that Kyle's badge is never blackened out.
Well, no, that's fine. Sometimes it's black, sometimes it's not.
That well, we see sense. That on the wait. Oh no,
no I, on the cover it's black, I'm and in the book a lot of times. Most of the time, I see it in the book. It's also black. But there's one panel where his badge, like the Green Lantern logo, isn't even green. It's just white.
What page is that?
That's it, like right after he's saving, like while he's saving John, right before he goes to save Natu.
Oh yeah, he has a white badge.
He's just a white badge. Like what?
I will say that one picture of in that white badge, the proportions are completely wrong.
Yeah, it is.
That arm is weird.
That arm is huge.
Anyway, to get into those story elements of the story, it's pretty weird that it's like now the third power source that, even though it's the second, but it's like the third power source that Henshaw has been stealing from Lanterns now. First being the rings themselves, second being the yellow Sinestro Corps rings, third now being an awful Lantern's battery in his chest. It's like, honestly, he's gone from being the Superman villain of just stealing all Superman's powers to being, okay, I am not just becoming the copycat Green Lantern with a Superman motif.
that's basically what it is now at this point.
Yeah, I never liked the character. I felt that anything you do outside of Superman with this guy is gonna feel pretty weak.
Like
I don't think it's weak. I honestly don't think it's weak. He's weak.
I think it's hard to come up with something interesting.
Like when they randomly shoot him in a Sinestro Corps war. Like why Cyborg Superman in Sinestro Corps? What? Doesn't even make sense.
It's a shared universe. It's a shared universe. So you'll see characters that you know, again, would appear in books that they shouldn't,
He's not even a space villain. He was originally
a very Earthbound hero.
Well, he was a hero.
Bound villain. He was a hero first, and then turned into Deception afterwards. But he was a very Earthbound type of a character. He first showed up on Earth as a cyborg Superman, blah blah blah. But he was cosmically altered, so he had the spacefaring origins to make him be a galactic type threat.
Well, yeah, but like a
fantastic. Can I just say really quickly?
What?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Really quickly. This art is pretty fucking good.
It is.
Like, aside from the bulky freaking cow. Well, right,
and the fact that all the dudes have so much hair.
I'm looking at these panels, and I'm like, Kyle looks really badass in this one panel where John's spitting out the machine in his mouth. Kyle looks fucking great there. Yeah, and I think when Ganthet shows up, the Alpha Lanterns behind him look fucking amazing.
Yeah, to say the least, Ganthet, old-time Guardian, coming out of his way, being, giving it his all as a new rookie Green Lantern.
Yeah. I still don't like the choice, but yeah, he's doing something. I like the Alpha Lanterns now. Well, not now, but I like them. They look cool.
I'm betting you anything, at least Boudicca will survive and kind of go on her own adventures.
That's a cover quote for the Alpha Lantern stories. I like them. They look cool. Brandon Wells.
But as you were saying, Colton, you say the Boudicca will not be the last remaining Alpha Lantern?
She's gotten the most development. I mean, we see a lot of signs where, like, she's kind of one with John. They kind of had, like, a moment where she was thinking about, was it worth it? And then we have the part that I think Jeff Johns kind of spoiled, the fact that she was going to be in the book anyways, even though he couldn't tell us.
Well, he did tell us that, didn't he?
No, Bizarre said he couldn't tell us because he's got one or two more hidden characters that are involved in the arc upcoming.
Oh, that's right.
And then Jeff Johns announces at a con, oh, yeah, Boudicca's going to be in this book, too. It's like, fucking Johns!
But I was like, you swore him in secrecy. You swore him in secrecy, and now you go out and blab at a con, don't you?
Johns!
But again, I'm eagerly awaiting the next issue of Green Lantern Corps issue 51.
Okay, see, I was praising the art before, and then I'm looking at this page, and it's like really poor storytelling. But there's a page where Natsu is supposed to be fighting Barrix, and they're like backs. Their backs are to each other. It's like, who's fighting who? And it's weird. And then Kyle is on there. He's got his fist balled up, holding John on the stretcher. And his other hand is, like, pointed straight out.
It
looks like little nubs, like someone gnawed off his fingers.
He's trying to fly through the wind.
No, I think that might be a fix.
I guess I can't be. You can't be too choosy with your artist, but I guess it's good at art for the majority of the issue. And then it's, like, really silly mistakes elsewhere. But, like, at the bottom of that same page, that Alpha Lantern looks fucking amazing. And it's like, oh, God, you're fucking with me. But in the next page, Samurai Kyle, fucking love that.
Samurai Kyle.
Who doesn't love that? I mean, Kyle.
Samurai Pizza Kyle.
The greatest thing you always get from Kyle in any issue is that he'll...
Imagination.
Yes, the imagination. He'll always have something up his sleeve that'll make you go, like, you know what? That's why Kyle has that ring.
Well, yeah, like in the JLA issues where he was, like, he'd be, like, anime-style mecha and stuff.
Yeah, right, the one thing that can always stand out for me in JLA, and I know Brandon will agree with me, seeing Grant Morrison, will be the giant head that he used to slurp up all the water from a tidal wave that engulfed the town once. And that's imagination.
Yeah. I always like his constructs. They always seem to be... Like, didn't he have the mecha in the Agent Orange art? When they showed him there? I don't know. We'll have to...
I was in Agent Orange.
Pretty sure he was there.
I'm pretty sure he wasn't.
When during the whole big, somebody was there, and they had a fucking
John,
office.
Somebody was there.
It might have been a construct. It might have been a construct.
You sure it was Stell?
Somebody was there.
Yeah, it was just Stell. He thought it was a mecha construct.
But it's a giant mecha. Wait, it might have been Stell.
I know what you're talking about.
It wasn't Stell.
I know he was talking about when Hal countered Ancient Ones, the fact that he had friends. I think he created constructs of, like, a god. He created constructs of John and Kyle.
People are like, this will be something Kyle probably thought up of.
Yeah, right. this will be a Kyle probably thought up in JLA 48.
I've seen him do this trick after he showed me that one anime, which I got bored of.
That stupid Gundam crap or whatever. Anyway,
but again, this issue itself, it has me going for the next issue, issue 51. Want to see more concerts from Kyle. Want to see more him taking charge in action. See these two, build on more of this, you know, Kyle and John relationship scene that we had, you know, because, again, it's following off the heels of Kyle and Guy. But aside from that, everybody, how do you feel about 50, issue 50, Colton? Are you ready for 51?
Oh, I'm ready for 51. I'm ready to see this shit go down.
Yeah!
I didn't even realize this was issue 50.
One of the things I wanted to mention, but I apparently didn't mention in the beginning of this, was the fact that this is issue, and I did say this before, this issue 50, it made it to issue 50, but it's not a double-sized print. It's not a double-sized issue. I mean, it hit the 50th mark. You know, brand new Green Lantern Corps, you know, kept going all the way through, but it did not get a double size.
I didn't pay extra for it, so if it's not double size,
yeah, we didn't pay extra for it.
If it was $4 and it was 22 pages, then I might have been angry, but we didn't pay extra for it, so it's okay. In my head.
I mean, but again, I'm sort of disappointed. And it's just issue 50. We did get a lot of backstory and flashbacks for Cyborg Superman.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a 50th issue to me. I don't know.
Go on, let me get you saying you want to, you know, what you think. 51. You ready for 51? Are you?
I'm ready for 51. I cannot wait for 51. It's going to be very 51-y. It'd be funny if 51...
Hey, give me an honest opinion. Did you like this issue enough
I like this issue. I'm excited to see where the story goes, I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of confused. But I don't know what's going to happen, so I don't know if I'm excited or not. I guess I can't wait for 51. I like Ari and Saif and all, but I'm a little ready for him to be off the book. These guys are just too manly for me. look at all of John Stewart's chest hair. I mean, come on, who has that much chest hair? Come on, John Stewart could be the new Old Spice guy.
Look at me, look at my ring, now look back at me. Yes. You wish you met me. Alright, getting back into Green Lantern Core issue 50, goodbye. Can't wait for issue 51.
Wait, goodbye or goodbye?
It's a good buy, as in a good purchase.
Okay. Yeah, good. Yeah, good. Good. Positive acquisition.
It's a positive acquisition. Highly recommended.
Me too.
And so we're gonna move on to. Listen, no need for that. We're just gonna keep rolling as if this is all normal. This is our new process for the show now. New person shows up, no introduction.
When did
we're all gonna die?
This is East.
This is East now. But I do have to introduce Brandon, not Brandon. All right, moving on. We're gonna move on to Brightest Day number 6 now. And I, for one, enjoyed the issue, quote unquote. But I'm going to let someone else field this one. Andrew, field us into what happened in Brightest Day number 6.
Well, a lot, very Martian Manhunter-centric, just him trying to figure out what the hell's going on with him apparently killing life as he's walking around and stuff, and more with his nemesis, like, coming to light. Still don't know what the fuck she is or what her deal is, but...
It's apparently a green Martian with...
Apparently it's like... Two, like conjoined twins or something.
Yeah,
right?
It seems that way. That's from the impression I got. He has an extra orifice for a mouth that apparently appears on the side of her quote unquote head. And
extra orifices.
And apparently a deformed, malformed physical being. It's like he keeps seems to be bloated or.
Yeah, it seems to be like this creature sort of implants itself into different humans at different times, but I'm not too clear on the reasons behind that. But anyway, and then there's stuff with Dove and Hawk, and they're unable to bring back Dawn Hall, and then Dawn comes back, but apparently she didn't really come back because a couple panels later, it's like nobody rose from the ground at all.
Oh yeah, and I have to say. The weirdest thing is apparently John has to love internet memes just because he has to love what? Internet memes, you know. Just because he has to have the White Lantern go, he loves cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
Unlimited cheeseburgers. I'm sorry, that had to come up.
You can tell this is Jeff Murray in this part because he's like, making a point to underscore, like, a Green Lantern, you're no Green Lantern, buddy. Like only someone of the strongest will can even make the ring, you know, make a beach ball, you know, which just undermines, like, years and years of Green Lantern. Anyway. And then there's a lot of things with the Firestorm stuff, which I thought was actually kind of cool. I mean, I've been on the fence about that whole storyline until now, but I kind of like where this is going. Ronnie, the whole revelation with Ronnie that he actually does remember about killing the other dude's girlfriend, I thought that was kind of powerful. Then that whole thing with them coming back together and all of that, I don't know, interesting seeing where that's going. On that, a little bit with Aquaman and a few retcons there. That's cool. I think a lot of people kind of called that was going to be Mara's sister. No big surprise there. I have to look back to the Aquaman issues, but I'm pretty sure, like, a lot of the stuff they're talking about here isn't quite the way that originally went down with, like, her people and she's supposed to kill him. Although there was a little bit of that, if I recall. Oh, yes, and then we have the latest 90s legacy murder of the week, Miss Martian at the end. Oh, that's great.
So is Miss Martian actually dead?
We don't know maybe. For the next issue. That's a problem.
Well, that the monster lady or whatever made it pretty clear in no uncertain terms that she was going to take care of that person, and we find out that person is Miss Martian, so I'm pretty sure.
I think it'd be interesting if she didn't leave it to chance. Making her look injured. You're going to trick him. Mm-hmm.
No, I think we're pretty much looking at the next Ryan Choi here.
That'd be terrible if it is.
First Chinese, now Martians. God damn it.
There's no species safe. It's no species safe.
No species. Only white.
Only white.
White was a species. must have failed my biology class.
I didn't read this issue because I decided to drop Brightest Day, so I didn't read number 5 either. But I heard there was no Hawkman story in this one, which makes me really excited to actually read it.
Oh, yeah.
That's a story that I hated the most.
I detected a distinct lack of sock this issue. I didn't think about the Hawkman, but now that I think about it, yeah, that's the only factor that was.
That was the biggest reason for me dropping the book, because like Hawkman.
For our audience is listening pleasure. Apparently, if you would like to jump on board on Brightest Day for the less suck value, you should jump in on Brightest Day number 6. We don't understand why. But for some reason, the lacklusterness of the series apparently had left the book at this point.
Well, because
you know what this means, though, is that number 7 is going to be like the all.
Oh my god.
The all Hawkman Hawk girl issue.
Yeah, because
I shouldn't send that too much down the river. I mean, it's not the Hawkman stuff isn't terrible. It's just I'm not interested in it, and it kind of
makes basically
me look at my watch as I'm reading.
The two stories I disliked the most were the Hawkman story and the Aquaman story. I just don't have a feel for that Aquaman. I just don't like it for some reason. I don't know. But I distinctly dislike the Hawkman story because I mean, come on, really, nobody cares about any of it. But with that story not in this issue, I might go back and find some way to read it.
Well, I think the idea is that they know that nobody cares about them, but they're supposed to make you care about them when this is done. But
that's the thing. You try to make them care about something, you're gonna find out they're really gonna start not even remotely given a flying F-word here. I don't want to think and say it. But a flying fuck as to what the hell they what you think about the story.
Yeah,
because honestly, for even as a side story, a small little like plot device for the Brightest Day series, I'm really finding it hard as to why I should really care about Hawkman and Hawkwoman. Seeing that now I've lost one of my favorite characters in Hawkgirl to you as a story. She was interesting.
It's a little bit like treating a little baby or a toddler or something. Like, here, you see this toilet? You want to use this toilet? Come over here and use this toilet. And the little kid's like, no, I think I'm fine with my diaper for now.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm all into this diaper thing. I don't really have to do much. You change me. I don't have to work at it. It's great.
But that's a better analogy because you should eventually change over.
Well, of course you should. That's true. But I mean, at their own pace if they want to.
But we're forced our hand because again, it's a good analogy just because you say eventually because if they want to at their own pace, Hawkman and Hawkwoman.
You're gonna like them, damn it.
Yeah, we're not really given much to build upon as to why we should care for them. I mean, yes, we're given the fact that they've lived countless lives, they've lost one another ever since they have been reunited through their past lives through the course of their existence, That's something we've always known. That's as characters, we've always known these two characters. But I want to say, when we're brought into Brightest Day, we're just shown that again, just not different because now they remember everything.
And to the credit of the writers, I mean, I would even venture that I can't imagine what any writer could do. I don't care if it's Morrison or anybody else. I don't know if there's a writer out there that could actually make me care about the Hawks, unless they just completely change who they are change them to such a degree that they would cease to become that character anymore. Then I might care, maybe, but even then.
Would it be worth it? If it was an interesting story, then maybe it wouldn't be so bad, like that you got rid of a good character in Kendra. But the fact that the story isn't even all that good.
Well, again, it's weird the way that there's no real, there's no real build. Like a good build-up as to why we should care for the guy. Because, again, this is a miniseries that's eventually going to end after, I don't know, like 12 issues or so. I'm not sure. Don't quote me here. I'm not sure how long the Brightest Day series is actually going to last.
26 issues.
Huh?
26 issues.
Okay. Is that the actual, what they're shooting for?
It's going to go
that's
for a
what
year.
What they're doing, 26, yeah. Same as the other one, the Justice League Generation Lost.
Okay. I didn't want to be quote, but apparently it's going to go for 26 issues. And for the past 5 issues that we've seen with the Hawks, I see no real build as to, structure-wise, as to why I should really care.
I see a build-up of the villain.
Yeah, we see a build-up as to what the villain is going through here. But
and this Hawk World stuff, which is, I can't find anything in there I care about.
That's one thing that does intrigue me in some way.
Now, is that the same Hawk World from, that miniseries back in the 80s or the 90s?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I never read that shit then, so I don't know. I mean,
they had different, completely different uniforms back when they did Hawk World.
More militaristic.
Yeah, more militaristic. I think their wings, I can't remember.
Metallic
wings. I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to say it and be wrong. But, yeah, metallic wings. They had metallic wings back when. And I'm not sure if this has anything to do with that. I'm still trying to figure out about Thanagar. Because there's still Hawks out there. There's an entire race of Hawk people that I haven't heard about since...
the latest Ran Thanagar War?
Yeah.
Rebels, actually.
They've been... and Rebels, yes, it's Rebels. And since, after the events of Blackest Night, I'm not sure what's going on with them. So... I hope this Hawk world has nothing to do with us being reintroduced to Thanagar, just become a warlike Hawk people world, which is going to be weird.
I doubt it because it wouldn't take all these mystical remains to open a portal, a couple star systems over. It would be another dimension.
It's a completely different Hawk world.
They could get in the ship and fly there if that was the case,
True, true, but they didn't know where the portal was leading them. It was just some mystical guy opening a gateway to another dimension. Yeah. So he's like, I don't know how to do interstellar flight.
Yeah.
So can Iron
Okay, so we're gonna go into the talk about the now existing double page advertisement for Brightest Day that didn't exist until six inches into Brightest Day itself, which is reminiscent to Countdown. Was it Countdown?
Yes, it was Countdown.
It's like all. Ethan did a number of these things back a couple of years ago. He did like two or three of these wraparounds with little clues about the year ahead.
Well, yeah, but
they're pretty good art too.
This is Ivan. Firstly, this one is, and second of all, it has no unifying theme at all. Unlike the ones, the Countdown ones, at least they had something.
Brightest Day.
Yeah, that's. I mean, like the Countdown ones are like, oh, this is like a sort of a pastiche on the. It's like, you know, oh yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of like the Last Supper.
That wasn't just Countdown centric. I mean, that was stuff from all over the DCU.
Well, yeah, but like, I mean, you know what I mean. It was like, oh yeah, this is like Battle Last Supper. Blah, blah, blah. This is what it looks like. And like, oh, like they're all on the Statue of Liberty. This is just a bunch of stuff going on at a bunch of different places that is just happening. And Ronnie Raymond.
Yeah. There's not a lot of subtlety in this one.
Whereas
Ethan was more clever in the other ones, where it was like they'd be like, what do you do? Like the mother box would be like laying on. Anyone that was on the ground
was dead.
Was someone dead or in danger? Just stuff, little touches
and then,
like
and then,
that.
And then there was a flash that had one foot on the ground and one foot not on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one just seems to be all over the place.
It's just basically telling you what's going on.
Yeah, honestly, I can't really figure out what's happening here. All I know is apparently all three, Atrocitus, Guy Gardner, and Ganthar are building a house for some reason. Gateway that showed up for the Hawk World.
Lifting the casket, looks like.
Yeah, just a weird way it's being done. It just seems it's just building materials. Like, okay, I see a casket, but it could be like lumber yard. I have no idea. Yeah.
About as subtle as it gets is Jason and Ronnie burying the Black Lantern Firestone, which is not very subtle at all. It's like, yes, we kind of see where this is going already. We kind of understand that they're going to band together. They're going to heal their wounds as they take on the common enemy in the Black Lantern Firestorm and come out best buds.
It is interesting. And we all see that coming. Everybody who came back is dead except for John Jones. Like you see Black Lantern Aquaman, he's dead again.
Yeah,
Black Lantern Firestorm, dead again. Jay, dead again. Dead man, we don't really know what's going on with him. And then
the Hawks are alive.
And then you see all
the Hawks are alive.
What?
Well, maybe. The Hawks are alive. Well, kind of.
The Hawks are. No,
they're being held.
Yeah, they're being held. They could be dead. And then you see all Captain Boomerang's lying here, but then there's Martian Manhunter who's fanning a flame.
I think I know why the image is so weird. It's all perfectly clear. Hal Jordan went to the White Lantern made entirely out of pure cocaine, snorted most of it, and passed up.
That's what the blood is.
kind of looks like it.
He's just bleeding all over the place.
The wind blowing a bit of it in the back.
What's funny is, like, you know, it's trying to be subtle, but it's just clearly, like, no one notices it, you know, outside of this new Aqualad, or, you know, King of the Seas with his sword. Behind him is supposed to be Black Manta in the shadows. Can't even notice it.
The eyes, yeah.
I am very, very happy that this wasn't done by, I forgot his name.
Ethan?
David Finch.
Oh.
So exciting.
I think it actually makes Black Manta not seem that threatening, because, like, oh, I get it. He's a cat now. He lies in the shadows.
A cat.
He's a coward. I got it.
Jumps at.
He's a coward. I got it. Yeah. You know, and the looming threat of the Anti-Matter again. I mean, like, honestly, he's like losing all his credibility.
Yeah, right. He's losing all of his
credibility
in every
now.
Story. Like, he's like, gone. He was gone for 20 years. He came back he sort of came back in Infinite Crisis, but not really. And then he came back in Sinestro Corps War, and now he's in everything ever.
Well, he doesn't ever do anything, though. He just shows up and gets spanked, and then goes away and comes back and does it again.
Pokes around with a fish, going like, ha-ha, poking around with a fish. Disappears.
Well, all he did was burn Kahan and poke Ion, and that was about it. What else has he done? Oh, and he powered the Black Lantern power battery, but even though, which is weird because after he burst out of the central power battery of the Black Lanterns, the Black Lanterns were still drawing power?
Yeah,
they were.
Yeah.
So let's not talk about Black Canada again.
Your existence in this book was moot. I mean, they didn't need you. They had sufficient power even without you in the battery.
Let's not do Black Canada again.
I did like that Green Lantern Corps where they did the dove bullet. I thought that was cool.
Yes.
Okay, or let's just go do Black Canada again.
The Brightest Day number 6, somewhat better in its storytelling. It gives us a better understanding as to what's going on with John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, I guess it's centric around him.
Although, what do you guys think though? I mean, it's like it's number 6, and I forget when they told us we would figure out what's going on number 8 or something. But number 6, and we still kind of don't really know what's going on. What do you guys think about that?
Honestly, that's true. We really don't know what's going on.
It's a 26-issue story. It's not like a 6-issue story that you're going to know what's going on right away. So I can understand
Still, what's the overall plot, though? We don't even know that.
There is no overall plot. We
just know the overall is that we're supposed to care as to what these newly revived characters are doing.
There is no overall plot. There's just six plots going on at the same time in one book.
And what has changed in continuity for these characters as to how their lives are not being affected since they have been brought back. And honestly, again, we have no idea. I mean, most of them have been laying around not doing much until something strikes their fancy.
But about the splash again, what is Mara doing? Like, what is this pose? Is her knee on the rock?
She's crying. She's crying.
Well, right? No, but like, how is she standing? Like, is her knee on the rock or something? I'm confused.
She's praying for Jesus Jordan to bring back her husband, all right?
And what about Black Willad?
He's too busy snorting cocaine.
Black Willad is literally pushing into the ground. His feet are in the ground.
Okay, in a lot of ways, what you saying, Andy?
In a lot of ways, it almost feels like Geoff Johns' secret origin, in the sense that it's like, before any consideration was made to, like, an overall arcing storyline or anything, like, the first priority was just going down a checklist of things they want to fix about people's origins and retconning things and stuff like that, and adjusting these characters that are back from the dead into the DCU. And
like Ronnie Raymond is an alcoholic again, even though he went to AA.
He's an alcoholic even after all those, stuff like that.
It's true.
And then after they've gone through the checklist, whatever space they have left, then we should do a story in there somewhere too.
Yeah.
We do know for a fact that eventually everything is going to arc together, like all these different 12 resurrectees are going to come together in some way and some finale of a story.
Well, they're all going to pray for Hal Jordan, who will be the dead White Lantern.
Oh, I'm not sure. I haven't been terribly keen on the rest of the Brightest Day series. I'm gonna continue reading, of course, to bring to hopefully understand how the end game is gonna be, because there has to be an end game. So I'll see how issue 7 is.
I'm in this for the long haul, and I'm reasonably entertained more than Countdown, more than Trinity. So I mean, that says something, I guess. So I can't complain too much.
Is that our show then?
You guys, are you entertained? Are you willing to go for number 7?
I can dig it.
I dropped the book after 4, actually.
Oh, yeah, you have dropped the book officially. That was our show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad you tuned in. Hopefully you will be with us following show when we continue on with Green Lantern 57 and Green Lantern Corps number 51, and bring you the latest news as what's going on for Brightest Day. See ya, poosers! Also, be sure to check us out online at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to check us out next time.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening thing, Room Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also, check out the Roy Clark Method, performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at www.freewebs.com/Roy Clark Method.
This magic green, it is the color green, it can do anything, Sometimes it speaks to me, it says, how?